Good morning, nerds. This weekend is Gen Con, one of the nation's biggest gaming events, which means we'll get a review from attendees next week, but we've still got plenty of things left for you to do here in town, and we'll let you know about some of our favorites. We'll also talk about our local Scrabble hero, the staying power of Joss Whedon's Firefly, and a recap of the recent Magic the Gathering Grand Prix here in Portland. Welcome to Nerd Portland Radio on X-Ray FM. Thanks for tuning in to Nerd Portland Radio. My name is Richard, and I'll be your host for the next half hour as we take a look at what's geeky here in Portland. First up, let's talk Scrabble. Even with all the crazy board games that have been invented in the last few years, Scrabble remains one of my all-time favorite games. My friends and I, we played casually, we tested the limits of our vocabularies, we'd play theme Scrabble, where words that hit a certain theme scored double points, or proper nouns only. You know, it kind of violates the key rule of the regular game. I also know friends who play with weird rules where you can only play made-up words, but you have to come up with an appropriate definition for the word. So shemp is perfectly allowable as long as you define it as the fourth member of a perceived trio. See that? Friday morning, Three Stooges meta-humor. I like to be, you know, historically topical, I guess. Anyway, one day my friends wouldn't play Scrabble with me anymore. Something had changed, and it was all because of this book. It's called Word Freak by Stefan Fatsis, and it's a book about one journalist's attempt to break into the world of competitive Scrabble. It's pretty incredible. He meets all these totally wacky people who are just deep into Scrabble. He studies the history of the game and how it's traveled from company to company. He talks about the players and how they've built up this crazy convention circuit that exists outside of Hasbro, which is the company that owns and produces the game today. And he focused on the hours and days and years of study and the toll that kind of obsession takes on some of the game's top players. Anyway, I was hooked. I started with two-letter words. Today there's 101 of them, which start with ah, which is a kind of lava, A-A, and ends with za, which is short for pizza. There's ki, Q-I, one spelling of a kind of spiritual energy, which is now in the two-letter word list, but it wasn't a few years ago. So it's a great word to know if you've got a Q, yes, one of your tiles, but you don't have a U to go with it. Used to be that QAT was the shortest cat, I guess. And now the legal three-letter words number more than 1,000. And I could look up what QAT means, but it's really besides the point. Once you start at this point, like once you start memorizing the twos and the threes, it's not about your vocabulary anymore. Top players just memorize endless list of words, and some really don't care what the words mean. They care about taking this rack of seven totally random tiles and playing the highest scoring possible combination of them on the board. As a casual player, Scrabble is about words. Many top competitive players, though, compare Scrabble to math, which I like, you know, as a math person. They talk about high-value tiles, they talk about bingos or triple-doubles. It's all about points. So Fatsis details his journey through the words, and I was really kind of struck with the level of time and devotion that it takes to get your brain adapted to quickly creating words in just a few seconds. And it's just really like nothing I've ever heard of. Anyway, based on the impressions from this book and a little bit of research online about the Scrabble scene, I think it's pretty safe to say that Portland's not much of a Scrabble town. A lot of the focus is really down in the Bay Area or up near New York. However, that didn't stop this year's winner of the National Scrabble Championship from being an Oregonian. 24-year-old Conrad Bassette Bouchard has been playing and competing in Scrabble tournaments for the last 10 years, and he's currently the third highest ranking player in the country. Actually, that may have changed since the tournament. He's won nationals twice now, though his last victory was in 2008. As a quick aside, Conrad was not actually the favorite to win this competition. There's a website called 538, and it's created by Nate Silver, who's a statistician and pollster. May know him as the guy who predicted the last few presidential elections on a state-by-state level to this ridiculous degree. Anyway, his site shouted that the competition would be won by Nigel Richards, a guy with a super brain and a super beard, and he's often seen as the best player in the world. But sometimes games just don't go the way you think, and so second-seeded Conrad placed first after 31 games of Scrabble, and Nigel Richards kind of struggled and fell to 16th place. But the words being played. So Conrad's championship game, he plays words like simply and docents, you know, words you might think of as words. But his second play was actually a racial slur. So one of those that when they show the picture in the news, you know, at some point, they like to do that. It'll probably get edited out and they'll change it to something not a slur. But things like that happen in these games more often than you'd think because it's a word. And so there was this big fight years ago about whether these slurs and curses would stay in the official Scrabble dictionary. And the argument basically had one side saying, well, they're bad words. I don't want my kids seeing these. And the other side was saying, but they're words. So eventually two books were published by Hasbro because they're stuck in the middle and they want to please, you know, they don't want to offend people, but they want to please these players who are so passionate about their game. And so one of the books for pros has all the words in it. And this casual dictionary, you know, it gets rid of all these slurs and curses so that no one could really complain. Conrad's opponents, on the other hand, played my favorite word of the game, which is trues, T-R-O-O-Z, which is totally serious. It means close-fitting tartan trousers. Anyway, after that, a few turns later, Conrad drops Florigen, which is a hormone in plants that controls flowering. And basically, at this point, he's got double his opponent's score. However, not slowing down, his opponent, and I'm just going to call him Jason Lee because that's his name, Jason plays Barf. And then on his next turn, he plays Venerate. So it's good, but it's not enough. Conrad stays ahead to win the game. But now you've got this game that has words like Florigen and Venerate, bingos that take all their tiles, and an extreme amount of mastery, and it's right there on the board next to Barf. So good game, guys. Portland actually ended up having three Scrabble competitors hit the top 10s at Nationals. Besides Conrad in first, local Noah Walton took 8th, Nigel Peltier followed in 9th, and actually a fourth player, Colton Kohler, took 42nd. Those are pretty much four of our five actually ranked players in the state of Oregon. Anyway, Scrabble is a really easy topic for me to just nerd on about, and I could just talk and talk and talk, but let's go ahead and take a stop. Let's listen to some music real quick, and since we're talking about words, this is Weird Al with Word Crimes.
Everybody shut up!
Back to Nerd Portland Radio here on X-Ray FM. That was Word Crimes by Weird Al Yankovic, and as good as that song is, it's so much better as a video with the lyrics right there on the screen so that you can just read them while you're listening. It's ridiculous. Go check it out if you haven't seen it already. So a few weeks ago, I covered the Star City Open, which is a tournament based on the card game Magic the Gathering. I was really stunned at how many players there were and how much money was sitting there in the room, and it turns out I hadn't seen anything yet. Last weekend was the Grand Prix, which is a huge event that takes over one of the larger halls at the Portland Convention Center. Player estimates, about 3,000 probably, and there were tons of different events for all types of games and gamers. And look, I know magic is fun to talk about if you're into magic, but I did that bit, you know, a couple weeks ago. So let me do two things here. First, let's talk about the type of game that people played at the Grand Prix, because I think it's super cool. And then let's talk about the other cool thing that happened, hashtag Axe Quest. Okay, so the main event of the Grand Prix was a game type called Team Sealed, and it sounds like tons of fun. You enter the game, the tournament, as a team of three, and you're given 12 booster packs of 15 cards each. The three of you then have to take those cards to create three whole functional decks. So say the players are, we'll just name them A, B, and C. In each round, they face another team of three players. A plays A in a best of three match, and then B and B, C and C, on and on. And then you check how the team did overall. Did my player A beat your A? Awesome. And then C also beat C, so now I've got, you know, two out of three people winning on my side, so we win the round. Teams move on, face a new team, you know, there's a big ranking, whatever else. And it was nuts. I was just walking around and the crowd was terrified because their own ranking depends on their friends and their teammates and how well they put everything together and how well they're playing together. So it's really different than a game where you bring in your own pre-constructed deck, because that, you know how it works. You know what's coming. You've got your answers. You've got a whole plan to victory mapped out. But this is all up to chance and skill right there at the moment. Did your favorite card not show up in those 12 packs? That's too bad. You know, figure something out. Play the game. And then the game theory comes in, which is my favorite part. So say our cards aren't very good. You know, we could make three average decks. Do we win a round? It's hard to say, you know, kind of average 50-50 maybe. Or what about we make one really good deck that's so good it wins almost all the time? And then we take those leftover cards and we've got B and C, right? We could give them about the same chance, but really all we have to do is win with two decks. So maybe we make B as good as we can with what's left over, and then C is just full of junk. So we've got super awesome, we have kind of awesome, we have gonna lose every time. Okay, but then it's a matter of, well, which one do we call A? Which one do we call B? Which one do we call C? Because if A is our best deck and my opponents are thinking the same thing, then A against A, if that's both of our best decks against each other, that's now down to like a toss-up. That's a 50-50, which means, well, now maybe we should have mixed that up. We could have, you know, tried to trick them, but they're trying to trick us. Maybe we should have just made three equal decks in the first place. So yeah, conversations like that are why I didn't play this game, because I'll just do game theory instead of actually playing. But I was there to check the event out, and now what I want to do is organize a small-scale Team Sealed game here in town. And since some of the people who helped run that tournament work at Guardian, I'm kind of hoping they'll just help us out and we can do it there. Anyway, new game was super cool, but it wasn't actually the highlight of the event for me. No Magic players of Portland, the highlight actually comes to us in the form of an 8-year-old girl. So first off, I have to admit, I've known this particular girl for her entire life, basically. I met her parents, Randy and Angie, playing D&D down in Eugene. And they've done a really good job of raising this their daughter with, you know, games with happiness. They take her to play Magic at a game store called Addictive Behaviors in Eugene. It's a really comfortable, nice place. And through them, I learned about the Lady Planeswalker Society. So the plot of Magic, if you can call it a plot, players are supposed to be planeswalkers. So they're super magicians, they cast these spells, they summon monsters, they duel each other. That's the whole game. So while anyone can play, it's kind of intimidating to jump in against seasoned players, you know, like it is in any game. And the players, you know, especially early on, but hasn't changed too much, the players are predominantly male. And I say that as someone who's played in plenty of events, plenty of game shops. Not a judgment thing, it's just the reality of the game. So, enter a woman named Tifa Robles, who started playing in 2001. And she recently wrote a compelling blog post about her journey from learning the game to eventually taking a job working for Magic: The Gathering full-time in just a couple years. And very quickly she grew frustrated playing against these veteran players who saw her as an easy mark. As she says in her post, "I could not stand that people would sit across from me expecting a win because I was a woman. And for them to get that win, it hurt. I practiced again and again so that I could prove them wrong." In an attempt to create a more welcoming environment, you know, people would ask her how to play the game, and she took this group of women and started the Lady Planeswalker Society at a game store in Seattle that welcomed her to play there. It quickly spread across the country, and now my old friends have this safe place in Eugene that they can bring their daughter to and play one of her favorite games. So that is all awesome. Fast forward to last weekend, where Katie and her parents are playing at the Grand Prix. They were going to do the main event, but Katie wanted to play in tons of smaller things throughout the weekend. And Katie got a lot of attention, since there weren't really a lot of 8-year-old girls out there playing and winning games of this tournament. So Katie meets a cosplayer named Christine Sprankle. Cosplay is, you know, dressing up like many of the major characters in the game, and Christine is really good at it. And she kind of took Katie under her wing, and when Katie was playing, she would go and stand behind her and make these intimidating poses to, you know, scare her opponents a little bit. So Katie decided that she wanted to cosplay too. She decided on a character named Garruk. So if you're familiar with Game of Thrones, and if not, you're just going to have to run with this. One of the Starks' bannermen, so, you know, midway through season one, first time we meet this guy, is this huge, loud guy named the Great John. He's enormous. He's got this huge beard. He's, you know, always yelling and growling. So you take that guy and you dress him up in more barbarian style armor, I guess. You give him a huge axe. That's Garruk. So Katie wants to be Garruk, which means she really needs, you know, a big, huge axe. And oddly enough, Nerf and Magic have teamed up to create the super exclusive foam version of it for Comic-Cons this year. The Grand Prix even has one stuck to the wall of the convention center, and if you win enough prize points throughout the weekend at the Grand Prix, you can take it home with you. But it's a ton of prize points. So begins hashtag AxeQuest, where Katie's parents attempt to trade their cards and other unique collectibles they've brought along for prize points from other people at the tournament. And all sorts of folks are coming over, promising their extra points once they get the item they want. It's huge. Christine Sprankle, the cosplayer from earlier, she gets involved. Twitter hears about it. Angie posts the story on Reddit. It blows up even more. But there just aren't enough points, and AxeQuest is in trouble. The final day of the convention arrives. It just doesn't look like it's going to happen, and Katie and her family decide to go to this panel on cosplaying that Katie's now super interested in doing. And while they were there, Christine Sprankle calls Katie up on stage, and she's kind of hesitant to run up there, but she goes up, and Christine gives her the axe, which the convention runners, the panelists, everyone else who was working there at the convention decided to gift her with. So it was kind of a cool ending to the whole Grand Prix experience. Angie reports that Katie is ridiculously excited about her shiny new axe, and that Katie immediately took all those prize points that they had stored up and used it to buy a gift for her little brother. So it's another one of those moments where we should be really excited about the little nerd community we have here in Portland. When we try, we do good work, people. All right, well, we'll be back with some upcoming events. Here's Departure by The Long Winters.
Just say, hey, I wanna. Just say, hey, I wanna.
That was Departure by the Long Winters here on Nerd Portland Radio. John Roderick gets kind of a weird pass in nerddom since he isn't quite a geek musician, but I'm going to give him a pass because, you know, he shows up at cons, he plays with Jonathan Colton, he's a fun guy, he's kind of bought in, so he's good. It's just fine. Okay, last thing I want to talk about today is one of the greatest TV shows ever to grace the screen. And while that's usually hyperbole, I can't help it here because I loved Firefly. And for those of you who have never seen it, Firefly is a show written by Joss Whedon, who is now the director of the Avengers movies. He created Buffy and Angel and Dollhouse and Dr. Horrible. The list goes on so much that he made a movie called Cabin in the Woods, which I think is fantastic, and it doesn't even make the list. He's done so many amazing things. And yet, once upon a time, he made a show that was dramatically canceled. So Firefly is this show about a bunch of rogues who fly around in a spaceship, name the Milano, they avoid the Nova Corps, and they find jobs where they can on the fringes of space before being dragged into a huge galaxy-changing conflict. No, wait. That's Guardians of the Galaxy. Okay, Firefly is a show about a bunch of rogues flying around in a spaceship named Serenity, avoiding the Alliance police and finding jobs where they can on the fringes of space before being dragged into a huge galaxy-changing conflict. I've got a type. Anyway, Firefly's crew is perfectly led by Captain Malcolm Reynolds, who's played by Nathan Fillion. He's kind of a member of the elite nerd hierarchy, whatever. The cast is excellent, the characters are compelling, and the whole thing has this Wild West space opera feel that hits just all the right notes. And with all that going for it, it didn't even make it through its first season. The story goes that Joss Whedon and Fox had this rocky start to their relationship, that Fox altered the order Whedon had wanted to show the episodes in, and they asked for more weirdness to keep the plot interesting. They also billed it as an action comedy. They often changed the schedule, and they would push it back to, in favor of sports and things like that. So Whedon had planned this show that would last 7 years, but as ratings fell, Fox canceled the show after 11 episodes. The last three that had been produced weren't even aired on Fox, and they would eventually see the light of day on the Sci-Fi Network much, much later. And it seems like most shows get canceled instead of reaching their natural conclusion, sure, but Firefly had this devoted following that just wouldn't stay silent about it. In the show, Captain Reynolds volunteers for the Browncoats, a rebellion that stands up against the Alliance in the name of freedom and of individuality, while the Alliance represents a universally monolithic oppression. And so the fans of Firefly stood up, calling themselves Browncoats, and tried to get the show back on the air. And in this extended metaphor, the Fox is the Alliance, if that wasn't clear. Okay, so since then, things have gone strangely for Firefly. There was a movie, Serenity. There's a series of comics. A role-playing game came out, but the show itself has never been back on the air. Not that it stops the fans from trying to make it happen, even years later. The PDX Browncoats have existed since 2004, and for the last 9 years have held an event called Can't Stop the Serenity, an annual showing of the movie that allows fans to share their mutual love of the series and donate money to charity. Good charity. The event was created here in Portland, and it's since spread across the country into England and Canada and Australia, wherever there are Browncoats. The annual showing this year happens tomorrow at the Clinton Street Theater. There are two showtimes, 2:30 and 7 p.m., and you can reserve your seat at brownpapertickets.com. Just go and search for Can't Stop the Serenity. If you're one of those who haven't seen the show or the movie, I'll put it this way. Nathan Fillion has done a lot of things at this point, and he still compares each one of those to his time on Firefly, because it's just that meaningful of an experience for just everyone involved. I'm not saying that you need to go and knit yourself a Jane hat or anything, but I think you owe it to yourself to check it out. Although if you are a knitter of Jane hats, you can knit me one and I won't say no to it. Alright, I'll be right back with a few events to check out this weekend. Since I'm in the mood, this is IKEA by Jonathan Colton right here on Nerd Portland Radio.
Long ago in days of yore, it all began with a god named Thor. There were Vikings and boats and some plans for a furniture store. Not a bodega, it's not a mall. This hill thanks for apartments smaller than mine, as if there were apartments smaller than mine. IKEA, IKEA. Just some oak and some pine and a handful of Norse men. IKEA, IKEA. Selling furniture for college kids and divorced men. Everyone has a home. Put your trust in the land where the furniture folds to a much smaller size. Billy the bookcase says hello. So does the table, his name is Ingo. And the chair is a ladderback birch, but his friends call him Carl. IKEA, just a mug and some pine and a handful of Norsemen. IKEA, selling furniture for college kids and divorcemen. Everyone has a home, but if you don't have a home, you can buy one there. $60 and a chair and a lamp and a shelf and some candles for you. I was a doubter just like you till I saw the American dream come true. In New Jersey, they got a goddamn Swedish parade. IKEA, just a mug and some pine and a handful of Norsemen. IKEA, selling furniture for college kids and divorced.
Welcome back to Nerd Portland Radio here on X-Ray FM. Let's finish it up with some events real quick. Saturday, you should spend seeing Serenity at the Clinton Street Theater. But let's say you don't want to do that. Last week, we talked about the Adult Soapbox Derby, which is also happening on Saturday up on Mount Tabor. There's a series of heats all day long, so you've got plenty of time to get everyone together, head up there, check it out before the final race that evening. Tuesday is also the regular Geek Trivia up at the Kennedy School. Bring a team and get ready to compete for $200 in prizes. It's hosted by power duo Court Weber and Bobby Roberts, and it's just a ton of fun. I know we've talked about it before, but I like it. Just go enjoy the craziness. Thursday is an event I always feel like I forget to mention. The third Thursday of every month at Guardian Games is Beer and Pizza Night. Drop in that evening, pay $10 for food and drinks that you can partake of while you play games at the greatest game shop in town. Really, why aren't you there every month for this? That's the question here. I mean, for me, it's scheduling conflicts. I get it, sure. But really, why aren't you there every week for this? All right, that's my time for this week. Thanks for tuning in and listening. If you're a fan of the show, let me know on Twitter at NerdPDXRadio. Also, if you've got something you'd like to hear about here on the show, feel free to send in some ideas. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.